1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Tony Smith and E to the T.
That's right, it's just the two of us for the show today, E.
You know what it is.
Everybody bailing on us here for the holiday week, and why not kick it off with a little holiday here on a Monday. The Jags coming off the bye week, play the Ravens next Sunday. We got the short broadcast week this week as well, Thursday and Friday off for the Thanksgiving holiday here on the show. Dempsey with on assignment for one more day. He'll be back with us tomorrow and Wednesday, and he's in pretty good shape in the Breakfast Bowl for this week, but it's a two-week contest this time around, E.
That's right. So, I forgot about that.
Yeah, so we'll see. You'd be in probably pretty big trouble.
I'd be in some gray water.
Yeah, if it wasn't a two-week contest on this one. But thankfully, you can add together the points for whatever we wind up doing with our draft on Wednesday for the Breakfast Bowl this week. David Garrard on his way up to handle some family festivities, so he's not going to be able to join us this morning either. As again, the Jags coming off their bye week, and we'll see how prepared they are. I got to tell you, watching the Ravens play yesterday, I was not happy with where how that game was going, how it wound up. For the Ravens yesterday, where the offense basically got nothing at all going against the Carolina Panthers. You know how that works, right? I mean, you know how that works.
Yeah, they about to come out firing.
Right. Lamar is going to be Lamar. Like, it was a one-week little valley for the Baltimore Ravens offense and Lamar Jackson, and next week's going to be, oh, no, what's happening?
Track meet.
Kind of thing.
Up and down the field.
Yeah, since we've seen how great the Jags are at containing quarterbacks that want to escape the pocket to this point this year. I mean, they didn't have any issues with Daniel Jones that I remember. Do you? No.
Oh, you mean Daniel Vic Jackson?
Daniel Jones tore him up a little bit. They did an all right job. I'll give him this against Jalen Hurts. They did an all right job against Hurts. He's not exactly a speed guy, but he's obviously a guy that the Eagles like to run with him. So they did a pretty good job against him. It's such a completely different kind of test. I was looking forward to, you know, asking DG9 kind of questions about, as a player on a sideline, when you're going up against a guy like Lamar, who is so unique, right? Like, what he does is so unique. And we have, you know, Justin Fields looks like he may be turning into one of those guys, you know, right now in the league. But those kind of guys where every play you feel like, all right, he has enough to throw it for 50, but he could run it for 20, and that's a whole lot more fun to watch, right? Like, he's got that kind of whatever it is to his game, and certainly Lamar Jackson is one of those guys, man. I am nervous about having picked the Jaguars to win this game against the Ravens before the season. I am nervous about having picked the Jaguars to win this game a couple weeks ago before they even played the Kansas City game. Remember, we went through game by game with you, me, Dempsey, and D-Rock each getting a vote, right? And we had a tie-breaking vote thrown in there so that we would have a win or loss either way for the Jags. And I know I picked the Ravens then. Do I dare pick the Ravens on Wednesday or whenever we get around out of picks with this thing this week? I'm not sure at this moment. But I will say it's Thanksgiving week. Right? So you need to think about the things that you're thankful for. That's part of the reason I went with the question of the day that I went with. The Chad and Sandy Real Estate question of the day, asking what is your favorite moment from the first 10 games of the Jaguars season? So let's focus in on some positivity, you know, with the question of the day today, some Thanksgiving related topics right there for you with the question of the day. And you can be ever so thankful that your second-year quarterback is not doing to your fan base what another second-year quarterback appears to be doing.
Boy.
To the Jets fan base today. It is madness. I was thinking about it when the tweets started kind of coming out after the Jets loss yesterday, and my reaction to it, just watching on Red Zone, which, thank goodness, you know, I get 2 weeks a year where I get to focus in just on the Red Zone, and I don't take either for granted, right? During the bye week and whatever that Thursday night game is going to come for the Jags, that Sunday I can lock in on the red zone, watching the punt return for the Patriots to win that game. And I said it where I was when it happened. I was like, look at that idiot with that block in the back. They're going to throw the flag here, and they're going to march off the 10-yard penalty from where that block came in, and they're going to have to attempt the field goal, and they've already missed two, right, in today's game, and that's how they're going to have to win the game because you have an unnecessary block at the end of the play, right? That's what I was focused on at the end of that game, and the NFL officials doing the very predictable thing, circle the wagons, boys. You know, after the game where they say, we reviewed the play and he got him on the shoulder. Yeah, sure. If the shoulder is now his back, yeah, he got him on the shoulder on that block. Does anyone have any doubt that if they had thrown a flag on that play and reviewed it afterwards because it was a tight call, I doubt they'd even review it. But if they had reviewed it afterwards, they come out and say, clearly a block in the back. Officials got it right. Right. At the end of the game on a play that's going to decide the game. They don't throw those guys under the bus for anything. They had that stupid you can challenge pass interference rule for a year, and they overturned nothing. Didn't matter. Tackled the guy as the ball was 10 yards away. Doesn't matter. Official got it right. You know, it just seems like they're going to circle the wagons on that kind of thing. So I was already frustrated for Jets fans a little bit in the moment. Like, how does that flag not come out was the way I was thinking. And then, as Ye would say at DEFCON 3, you know, up there in New York, right, with this madness coming out of the locker room, we've had our serious discussions about Trevor Lawrence, righty? You know, like, we've had real serious discussions about where he is and his progression.
Quite often.
Right? And is he arrived? Is he not arrived? Disappointment, these kind of words. We've had some insane fringe parts of the fan base that have thrown out the word bust and this kind of insanity, and we've tried to pump the brakes on all that. There are no brakes on the train when it's New York, right? They just don't exist. And once it starts in that direction, I don't know how you get it back on the rails.
And his play, his commentary off the field is not helping.
No, no. When asked, did you let down the defense? No, no. What are you talking about? They had six sacks and gave up 6 points and a punt return in the game. You didn't let down the defense?
Like Jeff and Dan, they made a point this morning. Every week, Trev would come up and he would take those punches. He would take them blows to the face. Yeah, yeah. I let the team down. Not Zach Wilson.
Nope. No. And, you know, it would be something with Trevor. And he may say, look, we got to get better at this. We got to do this. But it was never, it's their fault, right? Which is how it felt with the Wilson comments. And then you have the stuff coming out of the locker room. Did you see the tweet from SNY up in New York? Sources inside the Jets locker room told SNY that Zach Wilson was walking around after the game, quote, like he isn't the problem, end quote. It rubbed more than a few the wrong way, frustrating several others. Oh boy, that's what the New York Jets have to deal with, and they got a winning record, right? Like, they're dealing with that as they have a winning record to this point in the season. We're watching the emergence of Justin Fields. Like, some of the conversation about Fields was just way over the top. I mean, I forget who it was on ESPN, but I saw someone mention Justin Fields and MVP in the same sentence last week, and I'm like, what are we doing? This is a team that's in line to have a top five pick in the NFL draft, and you're talking about their quarterback as a possible MVP candidate? What are we talking about? In a league where Patrick Mahomes and Jalen Hurts and even Josh Allen are doing the things they're doing with their football teams, Justin Fields as an MVP, can you just say he's been great the
for a
last
couple of
month?
Weeks, right.
Right. Can we just say he's been great the last month and leave it at that? Why the over-the-top ridiculousness with some of this stuff? But it's out there. And the New York Jets in that locker room are going to have to find a way to meander through this madness.
Can you imagine, like, Frank Gore, thank you. Can you imagine if Zach Wilson was here in Jacksonville right now? Because that was a talk for a little bit. It was Trevor, him, and Justin Fields.
I pray that they would have made the choice of Fields if the Jets had had the number one pick and went with Trevor Lawrence, right?
Oh
You know, and that's not me just jumping on that bandwagon. You remember we were having the conversation heading into that draft. We didn't talk about it much. Like, it's kind of like the conversations that we had surrounding the 2017 draft, right? Where Mike and I shared our opinion on what we would do with the pick. And then we would tell you, we're not going to spend every day talking about what we would do with the pick because we know the Jaguars are going to take Leonard Fournette, right? There's no point in Mike and I sitting here every day and going, Mike saying, look, I would take Deshaun Watson, and me saying I would take Patrick Mahomes. If it was me making the pick for the football team, there was no point in doing that every day because we knew what they were going to do. We knew what they were going to do. They had made it clear their intention was to draft Leonard Fournette and Blake Bortles was going to be the quarterback.
Man, because they just extended Blake, right?
Didn't that was after 2016, okay. Right? 2016, when he threw the ball worse than I've ever seen an NFL quarterback throw it, and they were going to stick with him for another year. It was the first year Tom Coughlin was here. They had signed Calais and AJ and those guys in that free agent class, and it was clear, like it was so clear that the direction they were going to go was Leonard Fournette, and so we shared our opinion on what we would do if it was up to us, and here's what they're going to do. Let's discuss what they're going to do, right? Like, that's the way that it worked leading up to that. The Fields thing was the same thing. Jaguars had the number one overall pick. What's the point in going in on that over and over and over again? We know what they're going to do. They're taking Trevor Lawrence, but we would put it out there if they were to go another direction or if they had a choice among the other quarterbacks in this draft class. I hope I made myself clear enough that people heard it. I would have taken Justin Fields, right? That would have been the other guy that I took, and I thought that it was closer between him and Trevor Lawrence than it was between Justin Fields and any other quarterback in the class, right? Like, I felt like those two guys were clearly the top two quarterbacks in that class and that the Jets were possibly making a monumental mistake by getting caught up in the pro day for Zach Wilson, essentially. But it's not unheard of that NFL teams get caught up in things like pro days when everything is said and done, and the Jets are having to figure out some way to work themselves out of that mire while Justin Fields looks like he's becoming a budding star in the NFL before their very eyes. That's a shame for the New York Jets, and who could believe that an organization as well-run as the New York Jets could screw up a pick at quarterback at any point in recent history? Our question of the day, brought to you by Chad and Sandy Real Estate. What is your favorite moment from the first 10 games of the Jaguars season? As we've discussed, no Mike Dempsey, no David Garrard on the show today, so we're going to check in with a couple of our Jaguars reporters throughout the show. John Shipley will join me in the next segment, and we'll talk to the Jags beat reporter for Jaguar Report at SI.com about his reaction to the first 10 games, expectations for the final seven for this football team. Demetrius Harvey will join me later on in the show this morning as well. In the second hour, Tony Smith here with you, ET alongside. I'm decked out in my USA gear. I brought my Uncle Sam hat for the start of the World Cup for the U.S. men's soccer team. I can maybe share some of my brief thoughts on the World Cup as we go throughout the program this morning. Team USA is just, Team England has just defeated Team Iran 6-2. In their match this morning. A couple more games still to be played in the World Cup today, including England or USA and Wales this afternoon at 2 o'clock. John Shipley on the other side as we get things rolling here on a Monday edition of Jaguars Today on 1010 XL.
It's time to turn up the heat on the Roof It Right hot seat. Hot. Roof It Right so you can sleep at night. Everything you need to know about the Jags. Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
John Shipley joining us on the show, who we all love, right? And we, at least one member of our team knows that he loves him back. You know, every time.
Always love between Ship and I. He let me know that. I love Ship too.
I never doubt it.
I love you, Ship.
I love you too, man.
John Shipley, Jaguars beat reporter for Jaguar Report at SI.com, @_John_Shipley on Twitter. Are we still giving out Twitter handles? Are we nervous about that whole business over there at Twitter? Where are people going to find you when it goes kaput? I think is what everyone, the leading question on everyone's mind, John.
Yeah, no, I'm won't lie to you. I got tweeted that several times over the last week, and it made me actually be like, dang, you know, I should probably, you know, shore that up more, you know, a little bit more. Obviously, I'm on Facebook at Jaguar Report. We put everything we post on Twitter, we post there as well. And then SI.com/NFL/Jaguars, or just go to SI.com. You can, you know, find me through the Jaguars and the NFL section there. SI is never going anywhere. It's, you know, just Elon Musk, as far as I know, isn't buying them anytime soon.
I doubt he will be. And me personally, I'm not too worried about Twitter going tails up either. I think it'll be fine when everything is said and done. But we'll see here over the next few weeks. Want to talk about the first 10 weeks of the season for this Jaguars team with you, John. And want to start with what players have impressed you the most through the first 10 weeks of the season, and what maybe a player or two that has disappointed you the most thus far?
Yeah, no, I think a player who's impressed me the most has been Tyson Campbell. I think, you know, everybody wanted to see him take a year two leap and kind of continue that trajectory after he finished so strongly last year. And I think he's done that. You know, I said during training camp that he looked like their best defender during camp. He looked like he was somebody who had star potential. And I think he's shown that. If they weren't 3-7 and they were, you know, say 6-4 or 7-3, I think he'd be getting Pro Bowl and all pro consideration. I legitimately think he has been that good. Then, you know, on the offensive side, I've been impressed by Evan Engram. All the things that people said about his tenure in New York, you know, the ill-timed mistakes, the drops, the fumbles, we haven't really seen that in Jacksonville, like, at all. I think he has 1 to 2 drops in the season, maybe, but, you know, for the most part, he's been a secure security blanket. He should have 2 touchdowns. He had 1 wiped away against, obviously, in their last game. But I think overall, Engram has been really consistent. He's been one of the best field stretchers. He's been really good, you know, up the seam. I thought he played well versus the Kansas City Chiefs. And I think he's been somebody who's been a pleasant surprise.
How close in your mind is Tyson Campbell to being a true number one shutdown type of corner in the league? Is he a player that you expect to develop into that kind of player? And when do you think that would happen, if you think it will?
I think he's definitely close. I don't think, you know, it's fair to say he's there yet or anything, but I think it's important to remember that, you know, he's only 22 years old. You know, he's going to be 23 entering his third season. He's still a really, really young player. He's one of the youngest players on the team. You know, he's somebody who I firmly believe, and I think they believe inside the building as well. You know, he isn't nearly as good as he potentially can be yet, but he's somebody who, you know, they never have any concerns with his work ethic or anything like that. I did a story on him last month and talking to Deshaun Townsend, the cornerback's coach. He told him from the first time that he got the job in Jacksonville, the cornerback's coach, that, you know, he wanted to be elite and he wanted to do everything that it took to do that. And since then, he's met with Townsend really every single day, you know, before meetings, after meetings, to get some extra mental work in. So I think he has that kind of athletic profile. He's that kind of worker. So maybe not this year, but I think, you know, next year, especially as they add more talent to the defense and maybe have a more complete unit around him, I think you'll definitely see that in the future.
What about on the other side, just a player or two that maybe has disappointed you the most this year?
Yeah, no, I think just in terms of overall disappointment, I think obviously Shaquille Griffin has, you know, been one of them. I don't think that he was maybe playing as bad as people said on the overall, you know, course of the season. But yeah, you're often remembered in the NFL for what you did in your last game. And in his last game, you know, he helped give them, you know, a loss. One of the games that has really kind of sunk their season, one of the games that they should have won. You know, they scored 27 points in. I believe that was game Lawrence only threw 2 incompletions in. But, you know, he just, throughout the entire course of the game, you know, it was just a struggle after struggle. And it was one of those rare games where I think, you know, almost one player can be, you know, pointed to as a reason that they lost. And I think in a season like this, when that happens, that is obviously, you know, it's not something you want to see from somebody you had just signed, you know, just a year ago. And in terms of struggling, I really believe that overall, you know, Snoop Connor will be, you know, a solid back moving forward. But I just think his inability to earn snaps, you know, even with James Robinson out, you know, he's played 2 snaps in 3 games since James Robinson was traded. You know, he hasn't been given a carry. On one of the snaps, he was a fullback. So I think just the fact that they traded up in the 5th round to select a guy who can't even earn snaps on the offense. I think that's disappointing. And I mean, you can say it's a reflection of the strength of the room, but he got replaced as the backup by Jamichael Hasty, who was claimed off waivers. So it's not like, you know, he was beaten out by a top pick or anything like that.
Yeah, John, I think most fans, if we asked who's been the most disappointing Jaguar to this point, or at least a large portion of the fan base, would probably say Josh Allen. Especially here in the last month. I know I've talked about it. I think he was playing pretty well early on in the year. The last 3 weeks have been really disappointing from Josh, that he hasn't been able to do anything and certainly hasn't been able to do more than he has been able to. What is going on with him? Because I do think he started the season pretty well, but this last month has been close to bad for Josh Allen.
Yeah, no, I mean, he was on a tear over the first month of the season. He was one of the most productive pass rushers in the NFL in the first month. I think he had, you know, career-high pressures against the Chargers. I think he had 10 or 11, you know, in week three. So he started the season on complete fire. And since then, you know, it's really just started, you know, I don't want to say going backwards in terms of overall play, because the pressures are still there to an extent, but when you're a player like Josh Allen is, you know, you're looked at as one of the impact players on the defense, one of the cornerstones. You need to make impact plays. You know, just 3 sacks on the season, you know, the pressures aren't resulting in many quarterback hits, many tackles for loss. You know, when things like that are happening, when you're getting, you know, it seems like guys who are backups like Arden Key and DeJuan Smoot are making more impactful plays, then that's definitely an issue and that's a concern. And I think Allen knows that. I think the coaching staff knows that. And I'm not really sure what the reason is or what the answer is, because, you know, it's not like he's a guy who we've never seen play at a high level. We've seen it before. But then there are just these long stretches where, you know, just something doesn't happen.
John Shipley, Jaguars beat reporter for Jaguar Report at SI.com, joining us here for a few more minutes. Sticking with that kind of pass rush deal, which has been disappointing the last few weeks, how much improvement do you expect from Trayvon Walker over the course of the remainder of the season?
I think over the remainder of the season, it might not be something you see as much. I really think that he's somebody who, in year two, you might see more of a step in, I think, as, you know, just really to me, the big thing with him is just the mental reps at the NFL at this point, you know, playing these different formations, you know, playing obviously a new position outside linebacker. I think, you know, everybody was told it was going to be a process and kind of some growing pains with him. I don't think that ever actually prepares anybody, you know, for when they actually have to see it and go through it. But he is somebody who I think you can see is figuring it out a bit more each week. But he's also somebody who you can see, you know, has to figure it out. He's somebody who, you know, just isn't quite there yet. So I think he'll improve a good bit as he moves forward in his career. But for the rest of the rookie year, I would expect, honestly, more or less the same.
John, we're not going to let you get out of here, obviously, without talking about the quarterback. Dempsey and I have been saying throughout the season that we don't want to say that Trevor Lawrence has arrived yet, even with the way that he's played in the last couple of weeks particularly, because we want to be sure to leave room for the bigger and better things that we expect from Trevor Lawrence ultimately. How would you characterize Trevor's season to this point?
Yeah, I think absolutely that Trevor's season has been, in my eyes, it's been what you wanted to see. I think you would characterize it as there's definitely been, you know, a bit of a roller coaster element. I think, you know, even Press Taylor himself said that after the Raiders game, that, you know, the next step for Trevor was being consistent and ending that kind of roller coaster experience where, you know, he'll play great 1 week or even, you know, for a quarter and then, you know, play bad the next week. So I overall think I would characterize it as encouraging. I think you've seen Lawrence kind of take a lot of the steps forward from last year. I think it reflects in the tape. I think it reflects in the numbers. I think that, you know, obviously 13 touchdowns through 10 games. He doesn't set the world on fire. He's not going to get any all pro votes or anything like that. But I think overall what you're seeing from him, even in spurts and then lately over the last 2 weeks, I think you have to be encouraged. So like you said, you know, maybe nobody's going to be calling him a top 5 quarterback entering next year. You know, nobody's going to be saying that, you know, he's a MVP candidate or anything like that. But I think just in terms of did they hit on the quarterback, I think yes. In my opinion, any Jaguars fans who are maybe a bit timid about Trevor Lawrence's development, I mean, just remember that you could be the New York Jets right now. And you know, the questions that they're having about their quarterback entering today, I mean, even at his worst moments, nobody's having those questions about Lawrence.
Certainly not, right? Even with the low moments that he's had. And I'll say there were the loud small minority of the fan base that was bringing up the word bust and that kind of thing. And we all had to push back against that pretty hard. You know, when that was good, it's like, what are you talking about bust? It's like, there are things that he needs to get better at. Red zone, we've seen those get cleaned up here in the last couple of weeks, and we'll see where what he does and how he improves over the course of the last seven games of the season. With that in mind, what are your expectations for this team for the final seven games?
I really think the final seven games is going to be tough. I put out the other day my prediction for the final seven games, and I could see them winning, you know, two or three, but this is really a tough stretch. You play the Titans twice, you play the Ravens, you play the Cowboys, you play, obviously the Jets are having a ton of quarterback issues, but that's one of the best defenses and interior defensive lines and secondaries the Jaguars will face all season. So, I mean, this was not an easy second half of the schedule. I mean, the two easiest games are against the Detroit Lions, who are kind of hot right now, and the Houston Texans, who have had the Jaguars' numbers and literally beat them, you know, about a month ago in Jacksonville.
What do you believe the Jaguars' top three needs will be heading into the offseason?
I definitely think cornerback, offset Tyson Campbell, is one. I think when you can look at a position as kind of a singular reason several games have been lost. I mean, that game, the Denver Broncos game, it was a big reason. The New York Giants game, you know, the cornerback position offset Tyson Campbell has just been, you know, really a mess throughout the season. I think interior defensive line is another spot. You know, Arden Key, DeJuan Smoot are in contract years. Roy Robson-Harris, when you look at the financial situation, they really likely are going to have to move on from him after this season. I think his production kind of merits that as well. So they need more guys who can play inside in general, but especially on third down. And then after that, I think tight end is a big need. You know, there's really no real known clarity on what's going to happen with Evan Engram. You know, maybe he wants to come back into the system and play with Lawrence for another year. Maybe he wants to test the market after, you know, he kind of settled in for a year in Jacksonville. Who knows? So, but as of right now, they have three of their four tight ends are set to be free agents in March. So I think cornerback, interior, defensive line, and tight end are up there. I think they need more help on running back, need more offensive line depth, potentially another swing tackle if Juwan Taylor walks. And I do think that ultimately Juwan Taylor is going to be a free agent. They're going to start walk a little at right tackle moving forward. So you need another swing tackle. And I think those are the biggest ones presently.
John, what do you got coming up this week over at SI.com?
Yeah, I mean, you know, bye week is finally over. The bye week's always the weirdest week to cover for a beat guy because, I mean, most weeks I'm in the stadium, you know, 4 to 5, 6 days a week. During the bye week, we were there, you know, twice for like a combined like 30 minutes. You know, it was so out of whack. So I'm just, you know, look for this week, you know, talking to some guys about, you know, the Ravens game, some Jaguars who were here when Calais Campbell was here about their relationship with him. And just, I mean, how you defend Lamar Jackson, because, I mean, there's a few guys in that locker room who have played against him in college and then in the NFL, but it's something that it's kind of a perplexing question for every single defense that plays.
No doubt. John, appreciate you giving us a few minutes this morning.
No, thank you guys. I appreciate it.
John Shipley, Jags beat reporter for Jaguar Report at SI.com. You can follow him on Twitter @John_Shipley. And I'm sure we'll talk to him again once we get through with this final seven games to get back into that offseason mode. We appreciate John being one of the guys who joins us throughout the offseason to talk about updating whatever's going on with the Jacksonville Jaguars. So we appreciate John Shipley for joining us. Got more to get into. Demetrius Harvey going to join us in the second hour of the program this morning as well. We'll continue to talk about the Jags coming out of the bye week, getting ready for this matchup with the Baltimore Ravens on Sunday. Tony Smith, Emmanuel Thallerand here with you as we continue to roll along. It's a Monday edition of Jaguars Today on 1010 XL.
I think this team needs to learn how to win. So it's not just Trevor. Like someone asked me, what if they just won one game and Trevor was dynamite?
Right.
I said, well, okay, at least you know Trevor's good, but this franchise needs to get out of the doldrums. This team needs to, culture needs to change. There needs to be an expectation going into next year that's going to be good.
Everything you need to know about the Jags, Jaguars Today on 1010 XL.
You know, I wish there was some way to define learning how to win. right? Like, it just feels so vague. It's one of these sports things we throw out a lot with a team that is, right? Like, they got to learn how to win. What does that mean? They need to win? Like, is that just another way of saying they need to win? Part of me gets it, right? Like, you have to learn how to believe in those clutch moments at the end of games that you're going to be the guy, you're going to be the team that makes the play, right? And I do think there's something to that, that there is something to that belief in yourself and the guys around you. Maybe that, I guess, E is what learning to win is. I don't, like, there's no clear definition of what that is except winning.
Learning, and it's doing it as you're learning. You just win. Like, there's no other way to learn how to win. You just win.
Right? Like, it's the same kind of discussion to me as the good culture, bad culture in the NFL. Good culture is a winning culture. Bad culture is a losing culture. Right? That's how they're almost – that's how they're most definitively defined. The Kansas City Chiefs have a winning culture. They win. Right? Right? They win, and they win at a really high level.
Simple as that.
Right? Now – maybe the argument against that kind of thought, E, would be the New York Jets. Because that is a team with a winning record, but I think most people would say they have a losing culture. Right? So in the Jaguars 2017 season, maybe the same kind of thing. Team with a winning record, losing culture. Overall in the franchise, how do you get that turned around? You win for more than a year.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, you can't have a winning culture just because you had one winning season. Like, our 2017 season, people were like, oh, they had a winning culture. No, we didn't. We didn't have a winning culture. You can't have a winning culture until the winning is consistent.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2017, we thought it could have been a winning culture if we were winning in 2018.
Yeah.
However, that's not the case.
They won early in 2018.
But not often.
Not often enough. That road trip to Kansas City put them in their place pretty quick. That 2018 season, Kansas City and Dallas back-to-back, it got ugly.
We got humbled.
Yeah, and they ain't had no alibi when it got to that point in the season either. Right there. One more here from Tony Boselli, who joined the boys for breakfast with Boselli on the drill this morning, and he was just asked about his expectations for the rest of this season.
Going into 97, we expected to make the playoffs. We expected to contend. Like, there was an expectation coming into training camp. There was an expectation coming into that season. Like, we're a good football team. And I think that's what this team needs. Go 4-3, get to 7 wins. You can get 5-2 and get to 8 wins. You know, you're not going to go to the playoffs, but all of a sudden you're like, you know what, we're good. Like, we expect to make the playoffs next year. We expect to contend. So, you know, a 4-3 record with Trevor continuing to improve and play good football, that would be a successful season for me.
Yeah, that 96 team gets brought up a lot, doesn't it? And you can understand why when you're looking at the history of the franchise, what they did in 1996, and, you know, when you see the team that halfway through the year looks like, well, they got to go on a run to get to the playoffs. Well, we've seen them do it before. The one time they did it that way, right, was in 1996.
96, yep.
And it was a heck of a run for the second half of that season. And I've read Jags to Riches, John Osher and Pete Prisco's book several times now, and what Tony says right there does echo everything that I've heard or read about that team in 1996, right? They got that win early on in the year against the Pittsburgh Steelers, which I think you can compare to the Jaguars' road win against the Chargers, right? It's not the same kind of thing because the Chargers are not the same kind of franchise and year-to-year competitor that the Pittsburgh Steelers were at that time. But it is the same kind of, all right, everybody wake up. We can do whatever we want to do, right? It's in front of us and within our control to go as far as we can take ourselves, right, is what that kind of win can tell you early on in a football season. And in 1996, they got halfway through the year, looked at one another in the mirror and said, what are we doing, right? What are we doing? Do we want to live up to the standard that we think we can live up to or not, guys? We all got to get it going right now. And they got it going. At the highest level, they got it going for the back half of that schedule. I don't get that kind of feel from this team, necessarily. I don't know if you do, E, but I don't get that kind of feel from the 2022 Jags.
No, and I'm looking at this, the back half of this schedule. Tony, he would like to go he would like to go 4-3. Do you think that's possible?
Yeah, I do.
We got Baltimore, Detroit, Tennessee twice, Dallas, New York, and Houston.
Yeah.
That's a tough ask, man.
I mean, you'd have to beat Detroit, New York, and Houston.
Yes.
Probably, right? Uh-huh. But that gets you to 3. You split with Tennessee, that's 4. Right? Like, and I'm not saying any of that's easy or that I assume any of that, right?
It is doable.
Right? Like, we're way past assuming anything against Houston for this franchise, right?
Right.
We got to be way past that kind of madness. And watching Houston on the red zone yesterday, Davis Mills was awful.
He ain't it.
He was awful for the Texans in that game yesterday, but that ain't going to matter when Jacksonville's coming to town. There's something about that Jaguars emblem on a helmet. Houston gets up, right? I'm curious to see what the atmosphere is going to look like in Houston when Mr. Watson makes his return.
Oh, man.
Here soon.
Oh, man. That's must-see TV.
Yeah, that's right there on the horizon. Last week on NFL.com, that was talking about different players from around the league that have opportunities to break records over the course of the last couple months of the season. So it's stuff like single-season pass yards, which we all know these records are going to fall. They're playing an extra game, right? So Patrick Mahomes has a chance. He's on pace for 5,500 yards, basically. Peyton Manning has the record at 5,477. Justin Jefferson on pace going into this weekend's game. I'm not sure if he's still on this kind of pace because he didn't have a big game this week for the Minnesota Vikings. But going into this weekend's games, was on pace for 2,002 yards receiving this year. Calvin Johnson currently holds the record at 1,964. The single-season quarterback rush yards record held by Lamar Jackson at 1,206. Justin Fields on pace for 1,273 this year. And when I saw the numbers, for instance, Josh Allen looks like the one among those that we just were listing a moment ago. This is the one that feels like, all right, this one's going down, right? And it's the single-season total offensive yards. The record is Drew Brees with 5,562. Josh Allen going into this week, and he had a pretty good week this week again, playing up there in Detroit, which is where he'll be playing this week, by the way. But Josh Allen was on pace for 6,061 yards. He was 500 yards clear of the pace. Like these other guys, the margin was pretty thin for them to get there. I think at least a couple of those are probably going to go down anyway, but that is a big number for Josh Allen as far as pace. And when I saw it, I thought about it. If I hadn't, you might have gotten the names, right? Like if I had asked you single season passing yards leader, I think you would have got to Peyton.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I think you would have known that. If I asked you single season receiving yards leader,
yeah,
you would have known it was Calvin.
Yeah.
Right? Single season rushing yards leader for a quarterback, you would have known Lamar, but that MVP year,
right,
went off. Right? Even single season offensive yards, right? I think maybe you guess a guy like Tom Brady, something like that, Peyton Manning would be in the list, but Drew Brees is not unreasonable to get to, right? Uh-huh. And when I saw it, I thought about it. Would you have known the number?
Drew Brees' or?
For any of those four. For Peyton Manning, single-season yards leader, Calvin Johnson, receiving leader, Lamar Jackson, rushing leader, or Drew Brees' just total yards?
I would have known Lamar's for sure because that's like 1,206.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And we talked about it this morning, but I knew it before that. And Calvin Johnson, was it 1981 or something?
64.
1964?
Yeah.
Okay. So those are the two.
Yeah. Well, I just thought about, and again, I come at it from the perspective of baseball is my thing.
Right.
Right. I do a football and a Jaguar show. Baseball is my thing.
Right.
Right. It is what it is. I'm not living in a Major League Baseball town. I'm living in an NFL town, and I'm happy to be doing this every day and have this discussion about the Jaguars. But baseball fans, right, like it doesn't, we know Hank Aaron's 755.
Yeah, I even know that.
Right, like we know that number. And we know that Bond's number is 762, even if a lot of us ignore it. Right, like we know what those numbers are. And we know Babe Ruth was 714. Most baseball fans will probably know that Albert Pujols became the fourth guy to join the 700 home run club this year, and he's at 703. I think it's where he got to ultimately before the season ended. We know DiMaggio with that 56-game hitting streak. It's just there. That number means something. And I do wonder why in baseball those stick, right? Compared to football where I'm impressed that you even knew, like could get close to a couple of right. those numbers. Because I was one of those guys, if you would ask me the question, who is the single season receiving yards leader, I'd be Calvin Johnson.
Yeah.
Right? What was the number? I don't know.
Right.
Like, I don't know. Like, why in football don't the numbers stick?
I think in baseball, those numbers are a little they're glorified more. Like, the home run thing, that's a big deal. Whereas, like Calvin Johnson's thing, it was a big deal when he did it.
Yeah.
But it's not a big deal anymore.
Yeah.
The baseball thing, it's always going to be relevant. Those numbers are always popping.
Yeah, maybe it is a historical thing. And I think there is a little bit of the, you know, the numbers, offensive numbers are different, right? They don't mean exactly what they meant even 25 years ago in the NFL because it has skewed so hard.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, to that side. So it's hard to compare them, and it feels like maybe in baseball it still feels relevant.
Because it hasn't skewed any.
Right, like it's skewed to some degree, but it's not exactly the same. Like Babe Ruth's number, it's stupid.
That should be glorified way more than it
yeah,
is.
Yeah, it's stupid because there was nobody that was even close to that kind of – like it was – nobody was anywhere near Babe Ruth in those kind of numbers when he was putting those kind of numbers up. So the home run stuff has changed a little bit, but even with all of that change, you got one modern era player, right, after Barry Bonds that has hit that 700 home run mark. Everyone thought it was going to be A-Rod. He didn't get there. Right, there are players that everyone thought was going. Ken Griffey, he's going to get there. He didn't get there. It's Pujols, right? Like, he's the one who played it long enough to actually get to that number. I do think it's like football; they don't stick. I can remember our team's record way more than I can remember those kind of specific numbers for a player's individual record.
Also, with baseball, it's easy. It's 755. It's 62. Those numbers stick easier than 1,206.
For
sure. It's easier than 1964.
For sure. Do you know what the number is for the single-season rushing record?
Single-season rushing record? It's, isn't that Chris Johnson? No, that's he had total yards. No, he's not number one. No, I don't know.
It's Eric Dickerson.
Eric Dickerson. Is it over? It's 2,000 and, I don't know.
2105.
Okay, I was going to say 2004.
Yeah, 2105. I think there is something to that. It's the even two- and three-digit numbers versus uh-huh. four-digit numbers. I think there is something to that.
Right.
But you don't forget your PIN number.
No, I ain't going to forget that.
Right? Like you got your PIN number
yeah,
in your head.
That's locked in.
Maybe if we all made our PIN numbers NFL record number that means something to us, right? Maybe we'd remember these numbers a little bit easier. I just thought that was a little bit interesting. Demetrius Harvey going to join us on the other side. We'll continue our discussion of looking back a little bit at the first 10 games of the Jaguars season, looking ahead to the final seven as we are joined by Demetrius on the other side. Tony Smith, ET here with you. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
The Jags. Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
You ever catch the back end of one of these service announcements on TV? I flipped the television here in the studio over to Fox for the next couple of games with the World Cup today, including USA taking on Wales this afternoon at 2 o'clock, and Netherlands and Senegal are about 3 minutes into their game now. And I looked up, and they were halfway through some kind of announcement, right? The banner comes across the top of the TV, issued a warning, whatever. And it was listing county after county after county after county, like the whole area. And I was sitting there looking at it going, I was like, do I need to take a step outside? What is happening? Is the world ending outside this building right now? And then it rolled through the second time, and it's like, this is a required weekly test. I was like, oh, okay. All right, we're all good. No danger. I thought everything had changed while I'd been in this room for a couple of hours, that all of a sudden I'm going to walk out, that I need to bring something stronger than an umbrella to get from here to the car. As there was just all these warnings going up. Let's turn our attention back to Jaguars football. Welcome in Demetrius Harvey, a Jaguars reporter for the Times Union, at Demetrius82 on Twitter. Demetrius, appreciate you giving us a few minutes today.
No problem. How are you doing?
Doing well, man. We don't get to talk to you near enough when we get into the season. I'm sure we'll begin our, you know, basically every other week conversations again once we get into the offseason, but had an opportunity today to reach out to you with the Jags coming out of their bye week. And I guess we'll start with just what have your impressions been of this football team through the first 10 weeks of the season?
Yeah, it's been kind of shaky, right? You know, I thought coming into the season, 7 wins would probably be the barometer. I thought that that would be what we would expect to occur. And then 3 weeks into the season, they were 2-1, coming off of one of their best wins in quite some time against the Chargers in L.A. I thought, you know, maybe this team has a chance to make the playoffs. You know, I really thought that, and I think that most people did. And then, you know, obviously the losing streak, the 5 games in a row, I think everybody sort of got back down to earth. And I'm sort of in the same boat, I think, as pretty much everyone else, where, you know, that 6-7 win range, it's still a target. That's still something that's, you know, obviously achievable. And I think it's just because this team has shown improvement, especially offensively throughout the year. While obviously it's been a little up and down, you can see it sort of starting to click. I think the past 2 games have sort of shown that, especially against the Raiders. You know, they were able to go down there and storm back. You know, a 17-point deficit isn't easy to overcome. I just think that this team right now, and where it's at, the locker room, the players, the buy-in in terms of how they're responding to Coach Peterson and all of those kind of things have sort of set the tone. And I think that that's what you want to see, at least in year one under a brand new head coach. And I think that that's just something to look forward to for fans and observers over the last 7 games of the season.
What is going on with Devin Lloyd right now?
Yeah, I think it's a bit of a mixture of, you know, rookie wall, sort of, you know, all these rookies come in and the speed of the game they talk about, and they talk about how they've got, you know, adjusted to it, but you really don't, not in the first, you know, season. I feel like it takes a little bit longer, especially if you're, you know, coming from Utah. You know, it's not like they were playing in the SEC. You know, I don't want to make many excuses for him, but, you know, it's there's a learning curve. So I think that right now his brain is a little muddied, I guess you can say. And that's not an insult to him. That's just sort of how the linebacker position is. If you think about the defense that the Jaguars run under Mike Caldwell, it relies heavily on the linebacker position. Those guys are pretty much the bread and butter of it. If it doesn't go well there, it's probably not going to go well anywhere else. So right now, I think that Devin is just sort of hitting that wall where, you know, he might need to step back a little bit and take a look at it. But from my perspective, I think that what you do in that situation is you keep playing him. You keep giving him reps, not necessarily to take anything away from Chad Muma. But if Devin is supposed to be your guy for the future, I think that you want to keep him in the game. And I'm not sure what direction the Jaguars are going to go with that, if they're going to play Chad more, if he's going to start or anything of the sort. But for me right now, I think that you just give Devin a little bit more time, keep him going, and see what happens.
With what we've seen from Chad Muma here in the last couple weeks, where he has seen at least an expanded role in the defense, mm-hmm. is he playing well enough that kind of level of opportunity should be maintained compared mm-hmm. to what you're seeing when Devin Lloyd is on the field?
Yeah, you know, I don't know if he's necessarily played enough for me to say whether or not he has. But just looking at it, you know, he was in position. He was in the right position to make tackles against the Chiefs. You know, obviously against the Raiders, he had that pass breakup on his back. I don't know if that's necessarily a good play or not, but, you know, he was getting there. He was in the position to make that play. And I think that's all you can expect from a guy like him. And, yeah, you know, he's a guy who was able to play all of training camp. You know, people forget Devin missed all of training camp. So Chad was able to get those reps. Chad was able to play in all of the preseason games, I believe. I believe he played in that Falcons game. I'm not quite sure, but you know, he was able to get in there, and I'm sure, you know, seeing on the field, it looks like he's a lot more sound in technique and things of that nature. That's not really too much of a surprise. So just to answer your question, I think that he is capable of making more plays, capable of getting on the field. I don't necessarily think that they should just exclude him completely. I just more so think that they should continue rolling with Devin and at least seeing, you know, if that's going to improve or, you know, what direction that they should hit in going into next year.
Demetrius, with the discussion surrounding Trevor Lawrence, I know Dempsey and I have kind of pumped the brakes on people that have saying he's arrived here in the last couple of weeks because we expect more than even what we've seen from him the last couple of weeks. So we want to leave space for that, right? Do you think that Trevor Lawrence to this point has arrived, whatever that subjectively maybe means to you? And if not, what does his arriving look like?
I don't – that's such a hard term, I guess, arrive. You know, what does it mean really? Because if you look at Josh Allen, guys like him, you know, they've arrived. You can definitely say that. I don't think that Trevor's there yet. I don't think that I've seen, you know, those consistent games every week where he's taking the team and leading them down and scoring. You know, against the Chiefs even, you know, he had a pretty good game, but there were too many three and outs. There were too many situations where the offense just was stagnant, especially in that first half. So I'm not sure if he's arrived yet, but he's definitely improving. I mean, if you just look at the first several weeks of the season where he was sort of up and down, over the past two games, you know, he's been very consistent, very efficient. That's a product of also Doug Peterson putting him in a good position to succeed, but also with Trevor just sort of learning. You know, he doesn't make those mistakes that we've seen in the past. Like last year, you know, he would throw a ball up and you're like, where is that going to? Why is that getting intercepted? You know, he threw 17 interceptions. This year he's only thrown six, you know, so it's a situation where he is improving. Absolutely, I think you can say that. But to say he arrived, you're sort of cutting yourself short and you're making your expectations a lot more grand than they need to be, where all you need to do is sort of look at him and say, okay, he's getting better. And you know, if he does get to that point where he can throw that 350-yard game, three touchdowns, you know, very efficient, 70% completion, you know, that kind of game that you see from these star quarterbacks from time to time, then at that point you can say that he's arrived.
Is Travis Etienne, in your mind, being utilized properly, meaning the workload he's getting as a runner and his usage or lack thereof? Me personally, I'm surprised that we're 10 games into the season and he hasn't had more than three catches in a game yet. I am surprised by that number. But how do you feel about the workload he's getting as a runner and the usage that he's getting in the passing game at this point?
As a runner, I think that they're doing just fine. You know, you don't want him to have the 28 carries that he had the other week against the Raiders. You know, you want him to maybe get up to that 20 carry range. You know, ideally maybe 18, and then also you're right. You know, in the passing game, you want to get him more involved. You know, they did a couple screens against the Chiefs, and it worked out well. You know, he was able to go for one, I think, around 20 yards. I think that they need to utilize him more in the passing game. Maybe Trevor needs to check the ball down a bit more. I would have to go back and look and see if there were checkdowns available or anything like that. But, I think that it's a situation where you want to not just run him down into the ground, but you also want to make sure that you're utilizing probably, I would say, your best offensive player, in my opinion. You know, he's one of the most explosive players that they have, if not the most. He's a guy who's going to be able to take the ball, you know, from the 20-yard line to a touchdown, 80 yards on the ground. So if you're looking at it from a passing game perspective, I think they are underutilizing him. From a run game perspective, I think it's fine. You just don't have that second ball carrier. And I know we have talked about James Robinson a lot, not to say that he would have been that guy or a great guy to have back there, but it would have been good for them to have somebody else who's able to take the carries, and you don't feel like it's a wasted down. So right now I think that they're in a situation where they have to utilize him, but you can't overutilize him, but it hurts you when you don't have another guy back there to take the carries off.
What kind of grade would you give the offensive line to this point of the season, and how do you expect them to approach what to do with Jawan Taylor this offseason?
Yeah, I think the offensive line has been probably one of the most standout units on the team this year. I think that it's been a surprise. You know, you lose Brandon Linder, who, you know, while he might have been, you know, slightly overrated in terms of how much praise he got, he was a very good player right there in the center. And then you replace him with a rookie, you would think that there would be a pretty big drop off, but there hasn't been. You know, Ben Barch was in there at left guard, and you know, he got down for the season, and Tyler Shatley steps right in, and it's been an improvement, if anything. So I think that the offensive line, probably, if I had to give it a grade, maybe a B plus to an A, honestly, just because of what we've seen in the past. You know, Juwan Taylor has improved a lot. He's been one of their best players on offense. You know, Cam Robinson has shown improvement after getting his contract. I think that that's a good sign for the Jaguars moving forward. And but just on Juwan in general, it's tough because you have a guy in Walker Little who you invested a second round pick in last year. And yet all of a sudden, you know, Juwan Taylor is playing like he is. You know, do you let Juwan walk, or do you go ahead and re-up him? And then now all of a sudden you have Walker Little. Are you going to play him at guard? What are you going to do? So right now I would say it's tough. I would personally re-sign Juwan just because, you know, he's a guy who has shown clear improvement. I think that this scheme has helped him a lot. And I think that you really don't know what you have in Walker, and that's sort of what happens when you don't really play him in year one and you go into the season without needing him.
One more here for you, Demetrius. What do you believe the Jaguars' top three needs will be heading into this offseason?
Yeah, I think that cornerback two is the top need right now. I think that, you know, you have Tyson Campbell as CB1, and I think that that's been proven over the first, you know, 10 games of the season. I think that they need another pass rusher. It doesn't necessarily have to mean that Josh Allen or Trayvon Walker are going to be replaced, but inside, I think that they're lacking a bit on a consistent basis. And then, you know, potentially, obviously, another wide receiver. I know that they're going to be getting Calvin Ridley, but, you know, it's a situation where you don't really know what you got in him. And then also Marvin Jones is up. Who knows what they're going to do with Jamal Agnew. And I just think that they need another guy in there to sort of shore up that position. You know, the list goes on. You can list tight end and things of that nature too, but those are probably my top three.
Well, what do you got coming up at the Times Union this week?
Yeah, you know, I'll have a story about Chad Mumma, you know, coming up probably later on today after we get the locker room. I've got a story coming up very soon about just, you know, expectations, sort of where they lie in the draft, things of that nature. And then, you know, over the course of the week, just some more coverage, you know, obviously a preview on Sunday. So just check it out.
Appreciate it, Demetrius. Demetrius Harvey, Jaguars reporter for the Florida Times Union, at Demetrius82 on Twitter. We'll catch up again soon, man. Appreciate the time.
Appreciate you. Have a good one.
All right. There he goes. Demetrius Harvey joining us from the Florida Times Union. Covers the Jaguars there, obviously. We've had him on a lot over the years. You know, he covered it for Big Cat Country, and now he's over there at the Times Union. And it is weird, right, being the beat guy on the bye week. What do I do with my hands? You know, kind of thing going on with that one. But they're back to it today. Open locker room this afternoon. Doug Peterson doesn't speak today. He'll talk for the first time this week on Wednesday when everything is said and done. But they'll have you covered, Demetrius Harvey and John Shipley, obviously, with everything going on from the Jaguars locker room here this afternoon. We still got the gems from around the National Football League. We'll take a look at some of the news from around the NFL as we continue along. It's a Monday edition of Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
All Jags, all NFL. Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
Rolling along, Tony Smith, ET, here with you. Mike Dempsey on assignment for another 35 minutes. He'll be back with us tomorrow here on the program. Dave Garrard on his way to somewhere in the Carolinas, I'm pretty sure, to do Thanksgiving with the family. Hope they have a good time. It's that time of year, man. It's the holidays. We're getting everything together at my house as well. The Thanksgiving deal is a family deal. Like, I'll just be going over to do Thanksgiving with the family here in town. But the day my parents had a tradition when I was growing up, we would have friends over and they would decorate their Christmas tree. My parents would feed them and all of our friends would decorate the tree as payment for the work that they would do to get the tree together. And I have carried on that tradition with my friends. So I got some friends coming over on Friday, and they and their children are going to decorate my Christmas tree.
Hey, work smarter, not harder, Tony.
It's a good time. It's funny. Their kids every year now, like I sent out, because we also do like a Friendsgiving thing where we all get together and do a Thanksgiving meal together.
I did one of those a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, that kind of deal. And someone had tweeted out and said, hey, are we doing that again this year? When do we want to do it? I was like, well, let's just do it on Friday, do Friendsgiving, and we'll decorate the tree at the same time. And one of them said the kids have been asking about the tree for 3 weeks, right? Like, they've been, it's become a tradition. The kids want to be a part of it. That's cool.
So you got to do it.
Yeah, you got to do it. No doubt about it. Want to get into a few things here, but first, we got some news from around the National Football League. We call it Gems Around the NFL.
Now, Gems Around the NFL, brought to you by Beaches Jewelry and Pawn in Jack's Beach.
Atlanta Falcons return man and running back Cordarrelle Patterson set the NFL record for kicks returned for a touchdown when he returned his ninth career kickoff for a touchdown on Sunday, breaking a tie with Josh Cribbs and Leon Washington in that stat. Washington head coach Ron Rivera said yesterday quarterback Tyler Heinicke will remain the team starter even when Carson Wentz is ready to return from injured reserve for the Commanders. Chicago quarterback Justin Fields had his left shoulder evaluated after their game yesterday. Coach Matt Eberflus said that he would update his status later on in the week. Cincinnati running back Joe Mixon left their win over Pittsburgh early with a concussion. Los Angeles Rams quarterback Matthew Stafford was forced from their game with a concussion. Stafford missed the game last week, by the way, with a concussion. Atlanta tight end Kyle Pitts suffered a knee injury on Sunday that knocked him out of the game. He was unable to return. An interesting couple to keep an eye on for Jaguars fans this week. Baltimore safety Kyle Hamilton left their win against Carolina with a knee injury, and offensive tackle Ronnie Stanley suffered an ankle injury that knocked him out of the game. Stanley obviously has been dealing with ankle issues here for the last couple seasons that have kept him out for most of that time. So that is one to keep an eye on for sure with the Ravens heading to town here on Sunday. And week 11 wraps up tonight with the 5-4 San Francisco 49ers playing the 4-6 Arizona Cardinals in Estadio Azteca in Mexico City at 8:15 tonight on ESPN. All right, we've talked with John Shipley, we've talked with Demetrius this morning, E. So I'll just ask you, what are your expectations for the Jaguars for the final seven games of this season?
Let's see. We're 3-7 right now.
Mm-hmm.
Big Bo said he would like to see we win 4 out of 7. Mm-hmm. I'm shooting for 3. If we could win 3 more games, that'll put us right at where I predicted at, 6 games. And right now, Trevor is on he's trending upward as far as his play as a quarterback. It's a night and day difference from last year to this year. So as long as he's trending upwards, and if we can get 3 more games, anything more than 3 is a bonus. So 3 is what I'm looking for, to win 3 games and Trevor to continue to trend upwards. Travis Etienne as well. Matter of fact, all of our young players, as long as they're trending upwards. Christian Kirk, he's proven to be – I remember when we first signed him. We gave him too much money, this and that. And, you know, we remember when all that – like. Look how that's turning out, just fine, and he's trending upward still. Sure, he's still dropping balls in some tough places. Evan Engram, I wish he would get in the end zone a little bit more, but I think we are trending upward. So if we could get 3 more games, I'll be content.
So they got the Ravens this week coming out of the bye, right? And as positive as you are, you're still just picking them to win 3 of the last 7.
Yeah.
You can't make yourself do much more than that. At Detroit right now looks different than it did even a month ago.
I'm still going to give us the nod on that.
Yeah. Offensively at least, you know what you're going to get, right? The Lions have been able to score all year. They don't stop people much, but they've been able to score all year. And we've seen how things have gone through the first 10 when the Jags are playing a one-score game, and you've got to be the team that makes the stop or goes and gets the score. They've been much better about going to get the score, by the way, than they have been about getting the stop.
That's true.
In those kind of games. So we'll see how that works out. You got the two matchups against the Titans, the first one being up in Nashville here in 3 weeks. And I'm with you. That's tough, right? Like, every time you feel like maybe the ground is shifting a little bit beneath the Titans' feet, then you see a game like they played last week on Thursday night against Green Bay. And it's, okay, Green Bay's got some momentum coming out of that Dallas game. Let's see if they can get their season turned around. Brick wall. It's called the Tennessee Titans. And they've been that way now for about a half decade.
They're just a punch-you-in-the-mouth team.
They are.
It's not pretty, but you know what you're going to get, and they're going to give it to you, and they come out on top a lot of the times.
The Dallas Cowboys the week after that.
There's no chance.
I mean, yeah. I don't know, man. Dallas is – they're all over the place.
Their offense is better than our defense.
Yeah, well, so. I'm not going to disagree there. But they're inconsistent enough that, yeah, I think Dallas ought to win that game, right? And I certainly expect that the Cowboys are going to be favored coming in here to Jacksonville. But I don't think it's absurd. I would agree with you that it's probably the game I give the Jaguars the least chance to win, right,
yeah.
In the final seven. Maybe that and the at Nashville would be the two that I think I would give them the least chance to win. I give them a better chance this week against Baltimore. And I think Stanley injury really matters.
Yeah.
You can see the difference in that football team running the ball early this year when they didn't have Stanley and what happened with that run game when he came back, right? It took off. It looked like that old Ravens offense again. I'm curious to see what they might look like without Ronnie Stanley in there at left tackle. So I'd probably put the Dallas and Tennessee games as the two that I give them the least chance, but who the heck knows what's going to be going on with the New York Jets and how many more landmines they're going to have to defuse to get to December 22nd, even feeling all right about their football
team. Would you say that's the easiest? If you were to predict that we're going to win any one, which one of these games would you say, yeah, we're going to win that one, that you feel most comfortable?
Everything in me wants to say Houston.
Don't you say Houston.
Everything in me wants to say Houston, but I can't say it. I can't allow myself to make that my official pick in this. I'll say Detroit.
Okay.
Right. I'll say Detroit. But it's a tricky schedule given that the three games that you feel best about them winning are all on the road. Right? That's tricky. At Detroit, at the Jets, at the Texans are the three that you probably feel best about them getting the win. On the road for a football team that has been as inconsistent as this team has been to this point this season. You pause, right? Like when that's what you're looking at, you pause for sure before saying anything too definitive about where they're going to be at. But I'm usually not more optimistic than you, E. But I think I may be more optimistic than you about at least getting four of the final seven. Not that I expect them to, but I think I am a little bit more optimistic than you about them doing it.
I was going to say, like, man, do we not have another home win in us? Like, so we have Baltimore, then we have the Cowboys.
And the Titans, to close the season. Yeah. Titans will have whatever they're going to have wrapped up.
Oh, baby Jesus.
By that point. And Derrick Henry is going to need to rest for the playoffs because they're not getting the bye this year. You know, like they're not going to be the one seed in the AFC this year. Who knows what it's going to look like by the time we get to that game. But I wouldn't put my degree of confidence that they get four of these last seven high. Right? Like if I was to ask you on a scale of 1 to 10, your confidence that they go 4-3 in these last seven.
Come on, man. I don't know. It's not high at all. 4-3?
4-3. No. They win four of the last seven.
No. I'm not confident in that at all.
All right. 1 to 10. What's the number?
4.
4. Yeah. See, that's not unconfident, though. That's right there in the middle.
Yeah, 4.
Yeah. But you know what? I appreciate you, E.
All right, bet.
Right? Like, you're right back. The positivity, the energy was right back in the room. I really don't feel good about it. I'll give them about a 50-50 shot.
How about them Jags?
Go 4-3 in the final seven. I was expecting, like, I don't know, 1.
Nah.
You give them.
Because I'm giving them 3. So, I mean, maybe we could squeak out, you know, maybe we could squeak out one more.
Okay. Like, because I tell you, that's about where I'd be too. Like, my confidence level would be about a 4 out of 10. I felt like that was optimistic, But it tells us something about you and I in the room that you having to say 4-10 felt wrong to you.
It do.
Just felt wrong ultimately to you. We'll put a bow here on a Monday edition of Jaguars Today on the other side. Welcome in XL Primetime as we wrap it up for the day. Mike Dempsey back with us tomorrow here on the show. Tony Smith, ET here with you on Jaguars Today on 1010 XL.
Everything you need to know about the Jags. Jaguars Today on 1010 XL.
Getting ready to wrap it up here on a Monday. It's a short week, holiday week. Thanksgiving coming up on Thursday this week. So we have Thursday and Friday off. So just a couple more days in the broadcast week. Here for Jaguars Today, we have to move a few things around on the schedule as well. We will have Loggeman in tomorrow for a Check the Tape Tuesday, looking back at the first 10 games of the season and maybe what we expect to see in the final seven. So get your questions ready for him for the program tomorrow. We'll see exactly what we have on Wednesday. We know at some point we're going to do the picks in the Breakfast Bowl Wednesday this week. I think last year, E, didn't we do it off air? I think it's how we did it before or after the show.
I feel like we did. We had like a muster where we did it offline.
Can't do that exactly the same way this year because we need a listener to participate. So we'll do the picks for this week on air on Wednesday. And we all agreed that we would combine scores from week 11 and week 12 to determine who's going to wind up buying breakfast the week after that. And so we'll see. Dempsey in really good shape to take down the week this week. He would be having a nervous Monday night.
I would be watching the entire Monday night broadcast for sure.
I got basically my whole team still to play tonight. I got McCaffrey and Rondale Moore and George Kittle all going tonight. And I'm about 38, I think, points behind you with those three playing. But you can breathe a sigh of relief because Dempsey's going to have a good week. He's going to probably wind up around 100 points. But your 60 is going to be pretty competitive, I think, with D-Rock and whatever my score is going to wind up being. So there won't be a whole lot of separation there as far as who's going into next week nervous about what the scores are going to look like. The Chad and Sandy real estate question of the day asking you, what is your favorite moment from the first 10 games of the Jaguars season? Some of the answers that we got from Cristiano saying Trevor from his mic'd up moment when he said, I love it 52. I play better when you hit me against the Raiders. From Stoff, that we have an offensive coaching staff that can scheme receivers open. Jason said being 2-1 coming off of back-to-back impressive games against the Colts and Chargers. Why can't we have good things? Asked Jason. Well, you had them for 2 weeks. How long do you want to have them? Forever? No. Look, we all want to get to where the Jags are obviously much more consistent than they have been to this point. From Scott, J-Rob's 50-yard touchdown run on that 4th-and-1 early on in the year. That was a moment in time there against the Chargers. From JagFan15, shutting out the Colts. Shut the Colts fans at work up. I bet that was fun. For a few days after that. From Big Will, beating the Chargers in week 3, 38-10. The Jags were 2-1. They're in first place. They're getting national recognition as a good team. The offense and defense seem to be on point, and Trevor Lawrence seemed to have turned a corner. Since then, the Jags are 1-6 since they turned the corner. And from Cherry, watching the Jags beat the Chargers at 2 a.m. on a balcony in Rome. That's living, Jerry. 2 a.m. on a balcony in Rome.
You don't got to brag, bro.
Yeah, that's one of them, soft brags.
The kids call that a light flex.
A light flex. Totally. How would you answer the question, E? What is your favorite moment from the first 10 weeks?
Oh, and it comes out the top of my head, coming back from behind to beat the Raiders at home. Mm-hmm. That's pretty legit because I gave them no chance. I had some pretty good seats. I was lit. The hand was pouring. And we came back from behind 17-0, and then we took down the Raiders. So that's what I would say.
Yeah. I think if I'm picking the play or plays that stand out the most to me, that 50-yard run for J-Rob would be one of them. right? Honestly, still the Trayvon Walker interception week one, even with it coming in a loss, like when it happened, I was like, what was that, right? like what kind of athlete do they have in this guy at that point? Unfortunately, there hasn't been much since then to be like, look at that, right? Like he's been involved in some plays. Most of the ones you remember from their forward, unfortunately, are bad, right? But I'm with you. Like if I was going to pick the thing that stands out to me the most, it's you're down 17-0 with a team that had lost five in a row at that point, had found different ways to lose, everything that was going on with that football team, and that 17-0 didn't faze them, right? And they came back and won that football game. I think I would pick that as my moment. Before we get out of here, do need to get into a 10-10 take.
10-10 take.
Now, the 10-10 take with Mike Dempsey, brought to you by Northern Tool. Start solving your projects today at northerntool.com. We're made for this.
You know, obviously here on the show, we interact with Jaguars fans all the time, and they talk about, you know, how much they love this team, this franchise. And we'll go through off seasons like we just had heading into it, where they were going to have a new coach, who knew what was going to happen ultimately with the general manager at the time. And you would hear people say things like, how can something I love so much hate me so much, right? Like you would hear right? fans say that kind of thing. And, you know, as sports fans, unfortunately, that doesn't feel all that uncommon, right? That idea of something that you love that just doesn't love you back. I know J.J. LaSelva and myself have a running dialogue essentially about how much baseball people seem to hate baseball and baseball fans because they don't do anything that I would do as far as for the game. The young players in the game, no one even knows who they are, right? Like it does feel like baseball hates baseball fans is the way that it feels to me. I don't think any organization on the planet has less respect for the people who love their sport than FIFA. I'm serious. I don't think there's any organization on the planet that has less respect for the people who love. They make me feel bad for enjoying this tournament. That's how bad I think FIFA is as an organization. And I love watching the World Cup, but I do. Even having it on in the studio right now, I feel bad for having it on because of the things they're doing over there in Qatar and the absolute insanity of the FIFA president going to a microphone this weekend and saying the inane and stupid things that he said on a microphone, like he's somehow hugging the world while he's saying it. It's absolute madness. So you're not alone, Jaguars fans. That's all I'm telling you. You're not alone in feeling like something that you love doesn't always love you back in the sports world. And I seriously don't think there's an organization that hates soccer fans more than FIFA does. Just and has less respect for people than FIFA seems to with the decisions that they make time after time after time. Doesn't mean I won't be throwing a party when it's here in 4 years, because you better believe I will be and that I will be locked in for every moment of it. But they make me feel bad about doing it, and I wish that somehow that would get changed, but I got a feeling the greed's never going to get changed there in that particular organization. With that, let's welcome in XL Primetime.
Now, the two-minute drill, brought to you by Tire Outlet. Tire Outlet is now hiring. Visit TireOutlet.com/careers, equal opportunity employer.
Joe C., how was the bye weekend?
Well, you brought me in on the greed comment, and I guess from time to time I can be a little greedy, that's for sure. I was trying to soak up as much red zone and all mm-hmm. of that as possible. And it's funny, the bye week, and you know, we'll get into it a little bit today, Tony, but it makes you – all right, it makes you maybe appreciate the bad that is here a little bit more.
Sure.
Because, look, this team's only won 3 out of 10 times, and so it's not good – but this bad isn't as bad as some of the other bad that's out there.
Sure.
If that makes sense. And so we're going to run through it because I watched 2 fourth-quarter games that were 3-3 yesterday. And that includes the Ravens who were coming in on Sunday. It was a 3-3 slugfest mm-hmm. between them and Carolina, and then 3-3 between New England and New York before finally a punt return broke out in the middle of a game and ended it. But It was good. You know, I love it. Of course, college football on Saturday. It was bananas.
Anchor down, baby.
I think it is appropriate, E, that I bow to the man of Vanderbilt. I bow as a Gator bowing to the Commodores. This is Joe C to Fat Tony.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
I went 2 hours in the show today. I hadn't brought it up yet, had I, E? The Vanderbilt win.
Surprising.
Over
you waited
Florida
for the right
week.
Time because
I had a friend. Right, like someone on Twitter that had reached out to me was like, with that happening and the combination of that with Tennessee giving up the most points they've given up since 1890 in a football game and losing the way that Tennessee did, a national championship, gone. Yeah. Any hopes of any big aspirations they had this season, gone. He's like, it had to be like Christmas. I was like, no. Saturday was fun. A win for the Commodores over Volunteer Nation on Saturday
would be
Christmas to get bowl eligible with wins over Kentucky, Florida, and Tennessee to end the season. That's Christmas.
Well, I'll give you one that just kind of blows my mind. And look, all the credit to Clark Lee. He cried after the win over Kentucky. I cried after the win, the win for him and the loss from the Florida Gators.
Yeah.
I mean, it was that bad. But Florida has not lost to Tennessee, Kentucky, and Vanderbilt in the same year since the Eisenhower administration. Okay? That's how far back we're having to go. And so that, you know, look, whoever, you know, like, we're going to get on the Bible of Billy and the evangelists for them today. That's for sure.
Yeah, no doubt, as we'll be listening.
All right, buddy. Have a good rest of the afternoon. Anchor down. I got to say it all week.
Like, I'm glad that you came in here. There's at least a little blue on the shirt.
Yeah.
Today's a red, white, and blue day.
And I do, you know, I love your hat. I love the USA hat. I should have gone with the red, white, and blue on, because I will be watching.
Uh-huh.
I blew it with the purple shorts.
There's at least the blue on the shirt, and there's white too. You're just missing a little bit of red.
Oh, yeah,
that's all you need.
On.
Just paint a stripe in there. You know, it's got those stripes.
Purple pants red.
There we go. As Team USA gets set for their matchup this afternoon with Wales, 2:00. So we'll at least have the first half on in the studio before you get out of here this afternoon. Thank you, Joe C. XL Prime Time coming up from noon to 3:00. Here on 1010XL. That'll do it for us. I will hate watch Team USA this afternoon as I continue to just scratch my head at the decisions that FIFA makes, but it's not going to get me to turn off the tournament. Maybe it should. I don't know. Am I a bad person for watching the World Cup?
Nah.
All right. I feel like a bad person for watching the World Cup, but I'm probably going to do it anyway. You know, it's like that, the third piece of chocolate. You know, you're like, nah, yeah, I really shouldn't do that. This is so much worse because it's human rights violations and stuff like that. But my goodness, are they a trash organization? Go USA. Anchor down. That'll do it for us here on a Monday edition of Jaguars Today. For E.T., for Mike Dempsey, for Tony Smith. We'll talk to you again tomorrow with a Check the Tape Tuesday with Jeff Loggeman here on 1010XL.
Yo, Jacksonville.
Who won the E to W?
Two more.